Working hard is worth it if you're seeing results. And when it comes to working out, the same thing is true. You want the maximum benefit in the time you have, and that's exactly what Tonal is built for. And with their latest iteration, Tonal 2, you can ensure your workout is more tailored and effective than ever. Tonal's at-home strength training system uses adaptive weight to learn from your movement and set the optimal weight for every move, adjusting in one-pound increments up to 250 pounds, challenging even the most advanced users to push their limits. You can also experience a full body burn with the new Aero HIIT workouts, the perfect blend of heart-pumping cardio and strength. Plus, the new built-in Smart View leverages a high-resolution camera that lets you see yourself during your workout, analyzes your movement, and provides real-time coaching, just like a personal trainer. Right now, Tonal is offering our listeners $200 off your Tonal purchase with promo code 200TONAL. That's Tonal.com and use promo code 200TONAL for $200 off your purchase. That's Tonal.com. Promo code 200TONAL for $200 off.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America, this is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese. Broadcasting veteran Derek Pearson.
When you find something that moves them, that makes them smile, celebrate it. That's your task. That's your superpower.
Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman.
Rifles a pass. It was tipped. It's picked off by Foreman. He's at the 15, 10, 5. He'll score!
On 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
What up? Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, Old School. Brought to you by the Mercado, Certified Piedmontese, Special Ingredients of Butcher Shop, 84th and Havelock, 30th and Yankee Hill, 85th and Andre Matt, and 168th and Maple up there in the O. Austin, my brother.
Hey, what's up?
Are you still standing after a couple hours of strict?
Hey, man, I've been used to that for 2 years now. It was kind of nice to have a third voice in the room, someone between us. Sometimes it's nice to put tomfoolery to an end. But I'm used to it, right? We're still getting settled into the three-man rhythm of On the Block. Glad you're feeling a little bit better. Hope to get you back in the building tomorrow because, oh boy, I gotten kind of used to even just, you know, two shows where it's not just me and Strick having to keep that man in line. So yeah. I made it. We'll make it. We got the hour of sanity here, though, so we're good.
Yeah, it's hour of sanity. It's crazy that, you know, as I'm reading here, Austin, that today's National Signing Day and nothing's happening.
Not a thing.
Yeah, and I think it's going to probably be maybe two signing days, maybe, is that the big one is going to be obviously the early signing period. You still have the big schools to be able to have, you know, guys, you know, like a late qualifier. You don't even got to qualify anymore, but something like that. But I think it's more like maybe the FBS and smaller schools will get their fair shake, and that's transfers down to, you know, some people that maybe hit the portal a little bit late, maybe after a bowl game, so forth and so on. Saw Devin Hall. He's going out to Kearney, and so that's where you'll see a lot of that action that way. But it's interesting how in like a little over a year, college football has changed so drastic to where this signing period doesn't even make any like the third page of the newspaper or anything like that in the sports section. It's not even a big deal anymore,
which is just insane because I think about even, you know, 6-7 years ago, how much drama there still was on signing day, right? I mean, Nebraska had its fair share of sagas trying to get guys to flip or prevent guys from flipping, conversations with parents on signing day that you hear about after the fact. This first Wednesday in February used to be a big deal, used to be a huge deal. It's where the drama happened. It's where you found out whether a guy was going to come play for the school you root for or not. And it was kind of a national holiday around the sports world. And now I think there's just been such a shift to enrolling early. I think a lot of guys see the benefit of getting out of high school early, getting their coursework taken care of, getting, you know, a little bit of winter conditioning and then spring ball with their new team as a freshman. How much of an advantage that can be for guys, no matter how ready they are to step onto the field. So they're signing more in the early period. And there's a lot more coverage of recruitment as well, right? You can talk to a lot more sources. You can get in contact with coaches, with parents, with families, and kind of get an inclination of which way a guy is leaning. So for as much drama as there is leading up to a commitment, we see all these commitments. I mean, year round is what it really feels like. There's a whole industry, you know, of guys that just make graphics for guys when they're going to commit, and gals as well. So it's still dramatic. There's still, you know, plenty of coverage in signing, but it's not only shifted from this February date to the December date for early signing day, it's really shifted away from one day of drama to these recruits tell you when they're going to commit. Just wait, you know, with your notifications on social media to see where they commit, rather than, hey, check the paper the next day, check the local news to see what happened that night.
Yeah, it's crazy that, you know, the I guess you talk about the graphics and everybody wants their day in the, I guess, day in the sun. And they're strategic about it. They're, you know, they have their own little brands and business that, you know, this day and time. And, you know, I think that one of the things that's going to be really, really crucial is that is going to be probably, I don't know if it's going to be coaches or advisors, but they're going to have to start teaching these kids like when to turn the off switch on as far as the notoriety goes, you know, and how much you participate in it. Because if you look at it just over time, the more time that you focus on your brand, it's less away from whatever sports you're playing. So, you know, there's a lot of advantages to it, but then also disadvantages. And you talk about distractions, right? The normal distractions that everybody thinks that when you go to college is, or at least used to be, is that, okay, well, you're just away from home, less structure or no structure at all outside of football or basketball, or whatever you're playing. And then, you know, you get to go party and, you know, be a college kid. You know, that was distractions then. Now I think it's the cell phones, the attention, and everything besides, you know, whatever sport you're on campus to play. So,
and when we incentivize it in high school, they get that rush, that hit of, hey, it was a big deal. People loved this. I felt like I was on top of the world. Obviously, you know, there are pros and cons of the transfer portal, but the way just high school signings work now, I think leads to a lot of what we see with the transfer portal down the road. Just the natural human instinct and reaction to that, I think, starts in high school and they get a taste of it. And then, Jay, it continues through college, transfer portal. I want that again. How do I get that again? Yeah. I get in the portal. I get another graphic for when I commit.
Yeah, man. That, you know, attention or whatever you want to call it it's a powerful drug, man. I mean, it's, you know, I'm sure if you talk to Strick, he thinks it's, you know, conspiracy through the phones. I think it is part of, you know, it's controlling our youth, you know, just in general, but then also it's controlling our, you know, our athletes where, you know, we never got recruited at that level. You know, you got the handshakes and the pat on the backs when you got here. But then after that, it was like, okay, you got a couple of weeks whether you're coming or not. And, you know, spots were scarce. So you had to get in where you fit in. Now, even if you were good 2 years ago as a recruit and you go somewhere for 2 years and you jump back in the portal, they always reference to what you were coming out of high school.
Yeah.
And so you never lose that star power or whatever you want to call it. And you know, then if you go somewhere else and it starts to hit, well, then it, you know, it's all worth it. But if not, then you keep going back in the portal because you hear what people say is like, oh, he was a 3-4-5 star recruit coming out of high school, and then maybe he can go somewhere else and figure it out. So, you know, nevertheless, you know, look, it's a day and time of college sports, and so you're happy for the kids to be able to take advantage of it. So hopefully they don't let it take advantage of them, and that's the biggest, you know, part conversation piece is, you know, the growth of college football has kind of minimized the second signing day period, which used to be, you know, to Nebraska's case, I think when Scott Frost was here, you know, when they had that big haul of kids from Florida and Miami, I think was the second signing period or flips. Now it's kind of, all right, well, you got the second signing day period. And if you signed a couple guys there and you're a Power Four school, you looked at it like you don't have your ducks in a row. Considering that, you know, you just had a big, you know, a portal opening or a portal, the portal period was open. And so, you know, maybe the second sign-in period will go away, but then the early sign-in period is interesting because I think it's going to start to get to where you have a period to where you can sign. So I wonder if it's ever going to get to where, say, I want to recruit Austin Orman, shooting guard from, you know, Lincoln Lutheran. Yes, you're still in high school. But maybe I can sign you like a futures contract and then somehow, some way, still put some money in your pocket to make sure you don't switch and come, you know, January or whatever it would be. You're still on the plane to come to my university. So I think this is just a tipping point. But ultimately, it's going to be into real, real professional sports here real soon.
That would be fascinating to have a signing period versus two signing days. It does lead me to wonder what that might look like? Because obviously the transfer portal and high school recruiting are not the same thing, but we want to make sure that these young men and women that are deciding where they want to take their talents, a la LeBron, I'm deciding to take my talents to South Beach, that they're making the right decision, right? Some of them have it locked in. I mean, these conversations aren't just happening over the course of 1 month. It's speed dating, but it's not. So you would think that most of these young high school athletes going to college would have an idea by the early signing day. I think that's a big part of it, that these conversations have been happening. They know where they feel comfortable. Go with your gut. But at the same time, too, would we see like the transfer portal where there's a mad rush, you know, in the door and out the door to get signed first, right? When you're these schools, you want to have your first picks as often as you possibly can. You want to get them signed as quickly as possible. Sometimes you do your due diligence, sometimes you don't. So that's just kind of a natural risk, but I just want to make sure that as best as the NCAA or whatever the Football Oversight Committee becomes, that the incentives are aligned properly, right? Where you're not just signing just to sign, making a rash decision. Because, I mean, yeah, there is that rush of signing, getting it out of the way. But the hope is that the guys and the gals that are conflicted about where they want to go, where they have two dream schools, they can't decide between them, maybe the choice is to sign in that first signing period, go with your gut and live with it from there. But maybe for some others, the best decision is sit and wait, right? Take another couple calls over the next few weeks with each coach. See if you can, you know, take an unofficial visit over there, see campus again, talk to academic advisors, whatever it might be. Not easy to do, not simple to do, because you're probably in season or in the middle of training if you're in the off season. But it's just so hard, I think, for 17 and 18 year olds to wrap their mind around how big a decision it is all the time. Sometimes it's a slam dunk. Sometimes it is one of the biggest decisions of your life. And I just want to make sure that there are those guardrails in place for them so that as many, you know, people as possible are making the right decision for them and getting off on the right foot.
Yeah, I mean, we got an interesting text here on the text line. I was just reading where you're saying that, you know, a lot of the higher end high school kids won't graduate from high school. They'll go get a GED, hone their craft in JUCO, and it won't, you know, count against you. And then, you know, play, you know, at that point in time, I think you only got to play 1 year of college football, because I think the NFL, you essentially have to be out of high school for 3 years. That's, you know, and that's, there will be some people that are be athletically gifted enough to do that. But I will tell you this is that, number one, graduating high school is still needs to be a big deal, just because it, you know, teaches some life lessons. Number two, JUCO is not a place for the faint of the heart. It's not. You know that in any sport, you got to be tough to be there. So just going from high school to go down to JUCO and think you're going to hang out in JUCO and all of a sudden come out a better product versus if you went to a Power Four school for at least a year or two and really dove into those. You know, the accountability or in work ethic that you're going to learn at a Nebraska or somewhere like that, you're crazy. So, you know, I think it's going to be interesting how this is navigated, but, you know, I think people would think JUCO is somewhere, a place where unless they start to really pump some money into JUCOs and coaches and facilities and then development, sure. But there's not enough JUCOs that, or enough money that they're going to be able to do it. I think the best bet is to make the best decision. And like you said, these kids have the luxury of the way recruiting is now. Official visits aren't that big a deal because they come on unofficial visits all the time. And I think,
unlimited officials anymore too.
Right. And I think they can pay, you know, find ways to reimburse you when you come. Like, you know, some guys are so high profile, you know, you got to pay them probably to go to camps and stuff. I mean, these guys are, you know, got a quite a little bit of hustle going on. So I think it's just the way it's going right now. It's going to continue to evolve until there is a committee and a true commissioner. Until then, it's going to be a free for all. But then also, I think instead of fighting it, you know, find your way to kind of dive into it and still, you know, have some dignity about yourself, about how you operate in business, business wise. Because ultimately, at the end, you want to get the best players, put them in the best situations, best coaches, and then obviously win the most games possible. Because the more you win, the more you get paid, and the more you get paid, the bigger the piece of the pie is. So ultimately, it starts at the high school levels, but then it's going to go all the way up to college. And then obviously, when you go to the pros, it's a whole nother step. And we'll talk about the Super Bowl and what the commissioner said about 18 games. And I think that'll trickle down into college, right? The more games that are added to the NFL schedule, it will add to the college schedule. Now, how that goes is maybe increase the conference games or decrease the conference games and maybe have like two separate seasons where you have non-conference and kind of like pool play where you're just kind of getting your, you know, kinks worked out. I mean, because when you look at Ohio State this year, the first quarter of the season, they were just, it was like practice for them. Yeah, they were trying to figure it out. And even that Oregon game, they looked, yes, they were playing really good in the Rose Bowl, but it's humanly impossible to play that well against a team that it was undefeated like that. So to let you know they were using the first part of the season, get the kinks out. You can lose a game or two, especially if you have the media attention about you. Once you get into the tournament, anybody can win. So I think it's going to change college football as well. And then that will change the sign-up period, and then it will change the whole landscape of, you know, early commitments, decommitments. You'll start to see people get fined, right? So if you are under a pre-contract, right, where there's a sign-in period, you're going to, I guess they call it, I'm just looking right here, it's called a transfer fee in European soccer. So if I get transferred to Austin Orman's team, the Austin Orman's team has to pay the team I leave a fee, and then you got to pay me. So it's got to be worth it. So you want that decommitment to be worth it as well. And if they could ever get it to where the coaches have some sort of, and they probably won't because I think they're in a union, but some sort of transfer fee, or where you trade a coach, right? Say like Ryan Day is on the hot seat and there's some university like North Carolina or somebody that wants him, well, you're going to have to give up something. So this is all like in the future, but we would have never thought 10 years ago college football players would be getting paid this much. You would never think a college football player, even if you knew in the future would be getting paid, would be getting paid up to upwards, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, let alone a few guys getting paid millions. And whether that's perks and benefits or cars and rent paid or whatever, but ultimately they're putting a lot of cash in their pocket for a game that a lot of guys played for free for decades upon decades prior to that.
And that's one of the big things I think of this changing landscape and era of college football, especially in college athletics in general, is some of the rules that were in place were legitimately good. They were there with good rationale and for a reason. Other rules the NCAA got away with. It didn't make any sense, and it's just now coming to light. So many people have grown up with the system being a certain way. And it's hard to think critically about this stuff because of just how complicated it is, how much information comes out, at the very least weekly, if not daily sometimes, out of a fire hose, right? Not just a drip faucet. So it's a challenge, but I think the goal and the objective of people that are talking about this, I know we do our best, and especially the people that are changing the rules, make sure they're making the right changes for the right reason, right? You can't just say, it's the day and age, it's the era, we're gonna scrap it all, blow it all up and start over. Because I'm sure there's some good parts of the NCAA rulebook and rules and regulations that were in place for a reason, but you got to make sure you know what the rationale for them was. Because like you said, you know, a high school education should still matter. I'm not saying get rid of early enrollees, right? If someone has their grades in order, they're in good academic standing, they can graduate early and then get to winter conditioning and spring ball, more power to them. But should we be pushing more and more kids that way? Or should we be saying, hey, you got the rest of your life ahead of you. Chill, go to prom. You know, you won't be that far behind if you only get in for summer ball. You know, play Legion ball if you want to over the summer and then come. Like, I guess not many, you know, high enough level Division I football players would be doing that. But like my job, especially built on sports, right? We're here hosting a sports talk radio show, and that's kind of what our career is built on right now, is talking about stuff like this and talking about sports. They're important, they're fun, they have a necessary place in society. But at the same time, do we get too carried away? Do we put too much focus on it for a higher percentage of the kids, like Jeremiah Smith, Ryan Williams? Sure, go all in and absolutely focus on it, but do we need to push, you know, a third string offensive lineman to the same degree as we push the guys that have the dream of going to the NFL? Standards are standards. I'm not saying hold them less accountable or anything, but we got to be realistic about it too, where not everyone's going to the league. More guys, you know, should maybe put more of an emphasis on school and what comes next, or enjoying high school, even if they don't see the benefit of it in the moment, because they'll look back on that, you know, fonder in 30 years, 40 years, whatever it is, than, you know, really pushing through the grind of school just to get to college and miss out on these things they don't even know they're missing out on in high school.
Yeah, I mean, it's a individual basis, and it's a tough decision to make, because, you know, I would think you need to push everybody just to get to the maximum, because I think it's more ideally, you know, life lessons. You know, you got to, you know, sacrifice something to, you know, or sacrifice to get whatever you want. And, you know, obviously the 1% of the 1% is generally who makes it to the highest level, and the half a percent of that usually sticks, and that's not ever going to change. But I think also, the importance of, you know, school can be part of the equation as well. I don't think you have to totally nullify school, considering what you just said the numbers are. And so, you know, I think I'm reading here, Old Man 34, that says, you know, college football might need a reset. I think the bigger question is, do you think college football needs to hit rock bottom to force the reset? Now, rock bottom might be viewership go down, not good product, lose a lot of the coaches because of the Wild Wild West, whatever needs to happen to get the attention of everybody to say, okay, let's do something that benefits everybody instead of just benefits what the 10 to 20 schools that so happen to be able to spend the most money. The 10 to 20 coaches that are actually truly invested, you know, maybe that's what needs to happen in order to, you know, get some people to not only hear you, but listen. So, you know, there's a lot of suggestions out there. Things are going to, you know, change over time and continue to like push the mark and be like, I never would thought we'd get here, but I think things are changing at such a rapid pace. I think nothing's off the table. You got a, you know, insightful dude texted in. He said, Carter Nelson stayed for high school for state track. And, you know, look, for him, that's great. You know, it's something that he wanted to do. He's a great athlete. And I think it's an individual choice, and where you fit into the short and intermediate and long-term plans also dictate that as well. But then also, I think when you have a coach and coaching staff like Coach Rule, that are really trying to still develop players in this, I guess, fast-forwarded vacuum of college, you know, sports, and being true to their words, it allows kids like Carter Nelson to finish out things that he wants to do. And so, you know, just kind of depends on the school, where they're at as a team, where you're at as a coaching staff and tenure. But ultimately, you know, the players and the families have, you know, the right to say, you know, yes or no, when they want to go in the college and get a, you know, early start. And I like getting in there early. I wish I could have got in there early, but ultimately it worked out for me. And I had to wait a year, and I needed to even probably, you know, that extra 6 months when I was still on the basketball court to probably get, you know, focusing on football. But I, you know, I like playing another sport. And ultimately they didn't need me at Nebraska when I was coming out of Austin, believe it or not. They did not need,
they just didn't know they needed you.
That's true. They didn't know they needed a kid about 6'3", listed at 6'3". I was only about 6'2". Said I was 195, 200. Brother was about 185, 184. They didn't know that they needed me, and I didn't know that they needed them until we got here and it worked out. So, anyways, that's the first segment here on Old School. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and talk about what if the NFL goes to 18 games. And was it, I guess, the bite of the bad apple to do 17? Because if you do seven, it's kind of like Austin. If you got three, well, I don't know this, but they always say if you got three kids, you might as well go to four, right? So we'll take a quick break. Jay Foreman and Austin Orman, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Old School with DP and Jay. Download the mobile app and listen wherever you are on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.